I know that a lot of people want to say this, and believe me, I kind of do too, you know, that this is a coordinated disinfo, you know, kind of thing. But from my perspective and knowing people that I know, it seems like it just got out of control. That there was a desire to get the information out, but that it steamrolled and snowballed.
Right.
And a lot of people were not prepared for that from the perspective of, I think,
kind of the toothpaste is out of the tube situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's been the case actually since, but that's okay. I mean, you know, this isn't to say that that's not true.
Right.
It just means that it's a certain perspective of it. And, you know, and so what I ask in encounters is, what's the stuff that's kind of in not being asked? What's the stuff that when you go on, you know, when you go on a podcast with one of these major people who, I'm not saying you're not major, but you're asking some questions that most people aren't asking actually. And they're not asking those questions on purpose. And so I think that, you know, I think that I ask those questions. And now a lot of people I know are just want to keep a low profile about it because, we don't know what's going to happen next. At least I don't. I do know that it's going to keep going, but I don't know how it's going to keep going.
Yeah, I think that I feel that way about the whole world in general right now. I mean, you know, UFOs is kind of a symptomatic response almost. There's so many other things happening around the same time period as this, which again makes me think that it could be actually a component of this this green lighting of a disclosure. Because you know, I don't know how you feel, but I kind of feel like we're staring over a precipice right now. On one side is the society we have, the values, the beliefs, the understandings we have. And on the other side, the side we seem to be kind of stepping closer towards represents some form of transformation process, the amalgamation of artificial intelligence and quantum computation, more advanced models of consciousness, its novel effects, our understanding of parallel worlds and dimensions, the increased awareness of non-human intelligences. It just feels like this is the beginning of almost a new chapter. And when you know, when you analyze the intuitive and the prophetic nature of religious cultures over time with their proclamations of an end time or an epoch or a judgment day, and you correlate these intuitive kind of prophecies with the more analytical projection from technologists and futurists that we're moving towards a singularity, a biosynthetic symbiosis, the birth of an artificial god, it almost feels as if everyone is feeling the same thing, but we're simply translating it through our particular lens of perception. So some see the end time, some see the awakening of human consciousness, some see the birth of an artificial god through AI, but all of these claims have, I suppose, embedded within them, despite their differences, an underlying similarity, which is this feeling that we're transforming, that we've reached a definitive moment in our evolutionary story. So what does your intuition and what does your intellect tell you personally? Where does it feel like we're going to you?
Okay, that's a really great question and difficult to answer.
Very difficult to answer.
But I'll you know, and I don't think it can be answered, but I think that we can have a discussion about it.
Exactly.
And yeah, so, okay. After American Cosmic was published, so recall that in that book, that person, Tyler, he was always asked by the places where he worked to forecast. So one of his jobs was that once a year, he would be put into that room called the Room of the Impossible, where you can think anything. And he would be told, write down everything that you think is going to happen in a 5-year, you know, in 5 years, like everything you can think of. And so he was doing that because, and he may not have been the only person to do that. And so he had an ability. What made him so good at his job, and apparently still good at his job, is that he can know things almost like before they happen, right? Because you need that skill. for space launching and things like that, rocket launching. So they were utilizing him in that way. And after it was published, I was blessed in a sense to meet more people that were like that, even more like that. And these people were at the, basically the creator had been for 20 years, the creators of AI, and had a belief system that was similar to his, what I would call like a, if anybody's interested to follow up on that, the belief system is like the cosmist belief system.
Oh, this is a Russian thing, right?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. It's this idea that human evolution is coming to this point. Ray Kurzweil picked up on it when he wrote the book, The Singularity, but he had been around for a while.
Yeah.
And it's this idea. So there is an evolutionary idea that, you know, humans didn't stop evolving, you know, we're still evolving, and now we're evolving with technology. And that we're at that point now where it is exponential. And we do see that. We do see that. And, you know, for it's an ex- I, we can say that it's a scary time. I tend to see it as a very exciting time.
Yeah,
I think it's incredible. It's an incredible time to witness, because I was actually talking about this with my mother, and she was saying, you know, she just didn't have this idea, even though she's not religious and she's very scientific, and she's, you know, she has a master's degree in nursing, and, you know, so, and she said, you know, I suggested that, you know, humans were evolving at this point with technology, and she stopped me and she said, humans are evolving. And I said, well, haven't we been a role leader? You know, don't we do that? And what about natural selection and epigenetic changes? And so it didn't occur to her. But then she thought about it that way. And she thought, oh, okay. And she was on board with thinking about this. A friend of mine just gave a talk on AI and its potential and the doomer idea of AI. And she was bringing this idea to a lot of people who are afraid of AI. And she said, and so she gave them a graph, and she said, look at the increase in wealth and the increase in, you know, water, fresh water to people and this and that. And she explained that that linkage was human flourishing had a direct link with technology, right? Technological development. And so they kind of were on board, but they still didn't like it. They didn't like AI, didn't like technology. And then she said, okay, here's another way to look at it. Here's the graph of money, and let's look at how much money. And do you see that those people who have been using AI now for 30 years or more have been the economic industry, the bankers? They've been using AI. So I think it's time, you know, what's wrong with using AI to decentralize money, to decentralize, to bring it to people? And, you know, I tend to agree with her with respect to that. If AI is here, well, I think we need to, it's not going to, it's like kind of like the UFO disclosure. It's not going back into the bottle, right? It's out. So AI is out. And I think we can actually utilize it. And in fact, there's not a choice. So I think that, I also think it has a lot of, implications for this, you know, idea of non-human intelligence.
Yeah.
Although I will leave my friends, I do talk about it in encounters, but I leave that discussion to my friends who are expert at AI, because I'm not.
Well, but it's good to ponder about it, especially because, like you said, it's so prevalent. It's a real marker of our position right now in human evolution. We are still evolving. And I think it was Terence McKenna that once said that the story of the human being is the story of the monkey becoming the flying saucer. And it does feel that way. And I would say that when it comes to technology, you know, since the first time we picked up flint and struck flint to make flame and sharpened a stick to make a spear, we've been developing and propagating technology as a tool through which we exert our influence over our environment. We've been doing that since the dawn of humanity. So, you know, this is our baby that we've been gestating and we're now giving birth to, this artificial medium. So I have to think to myself that as much as it sounds and seems scary and could, you know, go down dystopian narratives, and, you know, it's all of our references for it are things like Matrix and Terminator and Blade Runner and, you know, these scary concepts. But, you know, I try to say to people, at least from my own perspective, if I think about my own life and, you know, the moments in my life where it's been very chaotic or dark and it's hard to really see, you know, oh, I'm never going to feel good again, or you know, you're in a rut. And then later down the line, you look back and you go, oh, okay, I kind of see why that needed to happen. I see how that helped me progress. It helped me get wiser, get stronger. And I like to think that if you look at the collective human group as a single entity, we're just going through the developmental stresses and strains of evolving. And yes, it does mean that there'll be chaos and uncertainty and very disruptive catalysts that come across and kind of like sweep the rug from under us as a society. But are these necessarily negative elements, or are these necessary kind of prerequisites? You know, is there, for example, an evolutionary prerequisite for us to in some way meld spirit and science together, connect intuition and logic, physics and metaphysics, in order for us to progress our perception of reality? Do we need hemisphere synchronization between what many consider to be opposing worldviews, spirit, science, when in reality, perhaps the clearest picture can be divined when these perspectives are in some way married together? What do you think?
Yes, I don't see a duality. And yeah. This has been a theme in all of my work, even with the book on purgatory. This idea of separating spirit and matter, you know, the separation of spirit and matter, which, you know, is really just a framework of perception. And I think that, especially when there's talk of this, the UFO, you know, and the back engineering of the, you know, what this is, and there's no talk of the weird experiences that a lot of the people who allegedly say they work on the craft or the parts and things like that, you know, their experiences doing that and the kinds of research that are being done with respect to interfacing with it, right, as a some type of, I would call it like some people call it I can't remember the term that's used by some of the scientists, but a multi-dimensional object. Yes, so I'm in agreement with you. And I think you said that very well, actually. I don't think I can say it better.
Well, thank you. One of the physicists that I was lucky enough to meet and then get on the record was Oak Shannon, former special projects manager for Los Alamos. And he said the same thing, that we could be looking at a multi-dimensional object coming into a lower dimensional plane, which is our existence. And perhaps not, we're not really getting the full picture from these things, which begs the question as to how you can recover them, which means it could just be a spectrum. I suppose there could literally just be space aliens in spaceships crashing or being shot down or landing. But I do think there's another component to this. You know, to me, the UFO subject is an extremely philosophical and metaphysical conversation. There isn't a clear-cut distinction between the physical and the metaphysical within this space. Because these objects, you know, these UFOs, they behave in ways that seem ethereal. And I think, you know, if you look back on someone like Arthur C. Clarke, his famous statement that any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So, you know, I guess, you know, is there space for this to be just sufficiently advanced technology, or is there also room for magic? Is there room for a strange melding between, as we just said, science and spirit, between our realm and the realms beyond it? Or is it simply space aliens in advanced spaceships, and we could just be looking at something so incredibly sophisticated that it comes off as spiritual or ephemeral in some way?
Okay, so when you say space aliens, you're talking about the
Alpha Centauri took a few years to get here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so even that hypothesis, the ET hypothesis, if you think about it, it could also be weird as well.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
could be that they're coming
Maybe
through.
I'm just desensitized to it by now, Diana. But
No,
you're
I think
absolutely right.
both of us are. I think both of us are. First, we have to understand that, like, historically, people don't understand this. I think contemporary people don't understand that people have always thought about this. So even people back in the day, like, you know, Aquinas, say the 12th, you know, the scholastic, you know, doctor of the church, person from, you know, Catholic history was talking about other worlds and, you know, quote unquote, people on other worlds. Emanuel Swedenborg in the 1700s was speaking about it, even wrote a book about it, said that he had a direct communication with people on other worlds as well. And, you know, he didn't call them extraterrestrials. He just said that they were people, spirits, you know, angels, things like this. He had a huge taxonomy of these beings. Tyler had a taxonomy of these beings as well, which, by the way, changed as I knew him. It developed. Okay, so I also discuss this in Encounters when I talk about this idea of hyper objects. So, in a sense, we're at a time when not only are we going into space, like physically, and seeing things that we've never seen before, and even seeing objects that are so incredibly large that we can't actually see them. We can only see them through a telescope, right? We can only see them through our technology. So there's a mediation between us and these objects. And that's the same thing that's happening digitally. So not only are we going out into space, but we're going into these screens, into digital environments where we're also, especially quantum environments, where we're dealing with things that we can't possibly understand without use of technology. And so technology, in a sense, has to be our second set of eyes in order to, it has to become us in a way to enter these environments. And so Dr. Whiteley, by the way, is very aware of the kinds of consciousness that accompanies, say, people, astronauts in space, but even pilots and pilots that encounter anomalies and things like that. And there is a shift. And not only that, but anthropologists have been looking at these hyper objects that people, you know, dimensional objects like platonic solids and things like that, that we can only really conceive of through either the language of mathematics or, you know, or modeling through computers and, you know, and getting to these ideas. So this is what I'm talking about in terms of this unprecedented time period for us, is that we now have the ability to, through our technology, you know, see with a different set of eyes. And it's technology that is this our glasses, really, you know, our glasses. And this does change our consciousness. It does change the way in which we exist.